Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to
Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist.
This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspectives.
Hey, girl, hey.
Hey.
How you doing, my love?
You know, I'm hanging on. I really feel like there was a tweet I saw that was like, you ever spill a little bit of coffee and realize how thin the thread you're hanging on by actually is?
Oh, it's so thin that it's a cup of coffee's width.
Yeah, I really feel like I almost cried this morning over like something really stupid that I can't even think about. Like that's where I'm at mentally, where it's just like the smallest thing could break me. Mm-hmm. Feeling very fragile at the moment.
That's like literally, that was me throughout the entirety of the pandemic. And I'm like trying to be tougher again because literally any minor critique or criticism.
Tiny could, like, inconvenience, just take you right out.
Like. Off the wall.
Yeah, I'm also like PMSing. Like my period's gonna start next week, so I also know that that's what it is. Like
Thank God.
Yeah, my rational mind is like, okay, that's what this is. Like you almost cried because of something insignificant earlier today. Like that's why.
That's why. But I mean, thank goodness that you're getting your period. You had me worried when you were like, if I don't get it this one week, it's gonna happen on my wedding, and I'm like,
Yeah. I mean, it hasn't happened yet, and my body is known to be unpredictable, so I'm not gonna, you know. Count my eggs, but in, right?
But okay. Before they've hatched. Either that or you're going to have to wear like a straight up diaper under that dress.
I will be furious.
It could give you a nice little like cushy butt though.
Oh God, I will be so mad. I will be so uncomfortable the whole time. Oh no, please God, or whatever. Please don't let it happen to me.
Goddess, if you're listening, give Keegan her period right now.
Yeah, universe, if you could just speed this along, that would be fantastic.
Oh my God. All right. Well, I've got a couple things to chat about this week.
Me too.
All right. I don't have anything that's like particularly horrible. Do you have anything super depressing?
No, I don't. I almost did. I was going to start writing notes on the U.S. gymnasts who testified.
Oh, I did write about that. I mean, it's depressing, but it's like not.
Well, I just find the way, because when they were testifying, they were talking about the ways in which they were let down by the FBI. Because all of these women, girls really at the time.
At the time, yeah, they were just young girls.
Yeah, went to the FBI and relived these absolutely horrific experiences. And the FBI was basically like, that's it.
Yeah.
To them, like to their faces.
And pushed aside information, covered up information, didn't do any follow-ups like they should have. So let's talk about that a little bit. I don't have a whole lot of notes about it, but since you also know the story, let's chat about it a little bit. So Olympic gymnast Simone Biles and Ali Raisman, along with athlete A, who was the initial girl to kind of start to bring down Larry Nassar. Her name was Maggie Nichols, and she is actually from my hometown.
Oh, look at that.
Woo-woo, Roseville Pride. They talked to the Senate Judiciary Committee on Wednesday morning that the current and former FBI agents should be held accountable for badly mishandling the Bureau's investigation into Larry Nassar. The evidence shows that the FBI did not respond with, quote, seriousness and urgency, and the report also found that agents mishandled evidence and later made false statements to investigators about the mistakes they made. So they, even though they knew that they made these mistakes, they were still covering their own asses to the other investigators and not sharing that information, which can also be really damaging to an investigation.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, and it was pointed out when I was listening to Daily Zeitgeist earlier, it was pointed out how lying to the FBI is a crime. And like, if you and I were to lie to the FBI and impede an investigation, there would be consequences. Yeah. There would be real consequences for that. And the fact that they've basically decided not to do anything to these FBI agents, not to give them really any consequences at all.
It's holding citizens up to a higher standard than the FBI.
As always. I mean, this is what we always see with law enforcement. Like over and over again, this is what we see is like citizens are being held to a higher standard than the people within your own ranks.
Yeah.
And what kind of message is that sending? I mean, these were
that those
children.
In power can get away with whatever they want to.
Right. Yeah. These were children. And not only that, like I can't imagine for someone like Simone Biles, the disconnect between basically being idolized to the nth degree by all of the United States
for being like America's sweetheart,
incredible athlete and bringing home the gold for us time and time again, and then being failed in such a tremendous way.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to fuck with Simone Biles though. Like she's got a good head in her shoulders. Like she really is like such a fierce woman. Like I wouldn't want to be on her bad side. I think that she does such a great job at like eloquently speaking up for herself. I really thought that all of these women did a really great job about speaking, you know, clearly about what was happening to them during this time. And they were supported by multiple senators as well, who questioned why the Department of Justice did not pursue criminal charges against the agents. Michaela Maroney was also present, and she stated, "By not taking action from my report, they, the FBI, allowed a child molester to go free for more than a year. They had legal evidence of child abuse and did nothing." Senator Dick Durbin said that the FBI doctored paperwork and lied to the media in an effort to hide their mistakes, and that the agents engaged in a cover-up by making material false statements to investigators.
Also,
sorry
to jump in. It just occurred to me, though, I was thinking like, yeah, she's got it exactly right. Like, they allowed a child molester to go free for a year to do however much damage that he did in that year.
Yeah.
And I really want to question the FBI agent who heard what they had to say and didn't think it was enough. Because I'm like, what kind of person, what are you doing, sir, in your free time that you think that an adult man abusing children and using his position of power and authority over them to sexually abuse them isn't enough? Like, what where's the line for you then? What are you doing in your everyday life that you think that this is acceptable?
The only thing that I can think of, and this is not an excuse obviously, but the only thing I can think of is not believing them, like not totally buying the stories that these girls are telling.
But even then, so okay, say you don't believe them.
There is evidence.
This is the story you think that they're going to make up. Like, you think that they're going to make up a story that to you is not even that extreme.
Like, right. But I mean, like, think about the numerous amounts of people that come forward and tell their stories and aren't believed. To me, that's like the one thing that makes sense, is that, you know, when the first group of girls were coming forward, that they were like, oh, well, this is like, this guy's been working as a doctor for this many years. He's very well respected. The U.S., you know, Olympic Committee is cool with them. Like, maybe there was like a lot of mental gymnastics that they went through. There's no way that you can believe their story and still not do anything.
Unless you don't care, which is what I'm saying.
Totally. Unless you don't care.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like,
then you should not be working for the FBI.
Right? Like, what kind of person is this?
Yeah.
Like,
and that's why there are so many senators that got involved. And as of right now, there hasn't been any accountability. And that's what they're really trying to do. Luckily, Larry Nassar remains in prison. He's going to be there for like over 200 years. He's long gone. But Simone Biles also called for the officials from USA Gymnastics and the US Olympic and Paralympic Committee to be held accountable. She said, "This is the largest case of sexual abuse in the history of American sport. And although there has been an independent investigation of the FBI's handling of the case, neither USAG or USOPC have ever been made the subject of the same level of scrutiny," which drives me crazy. Because have you watched Athlete A on Netflix? Oh my gosh. I mean, trigger warning for all the things, obviously, but it's a Netflix documentary. It's so well made. And they really go into what USA Gymnastics knew, if you know about the Carolis, you know, they're like the top, they're the Olympic coaches and all this stuff. Like, everybody knew what was going on. There were so many cover-ups. So if the FBI is going to be investigated, USA Gymnastics has to be investigated. The US Olympic Committee needs to be investigated. The Olympic Committee in all needs to do something about these abusers that they are letting in the Olympics, because it was that wrestler or something, right? Mm-hmm. That was allowed to compete in the Olympics, even though he had
And I believe that
allegations.
And there was also another coach.
Yeah.
For a different sport.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, yeah, of course, we see this time and time again, like, abusers are going to seek out jobs and positions where they can put themselves in places of authority, mm-hmm. where they have access to victims, you know, and I feel like because of that, these people in these types of jobs need to be vetted.
Yeah.
Incredibly
to
well.
To like the nth degree.
And these allegations need to be taken seriously immediately. Because as we've seen
fake, like, even if it's not true, like, that's the thing. What does it hurt if it's not true? You need to investigate. You need to get down to the truth. Because that's people's like excuse all the time. It's like, oh, well, you can't. look into every allegation, but you should.
Yes, you can, first of all. And you should. Yeah. I mean, and first of all, we know that most of the time, people don't lie about this kind of thing. It's not that it never happens, but most of the time.
I'm pretty sure the exact number is like 2% of the time, if I remember correctly.
For rapes, I know that for that's rapes, the case. Yeah. But sexual assaults, I'm not sure what the exact percentage is, but the likelihood.
Yeah.
And the likelihood of these athletes who have trained their entire lives for these moments, right? To go to the Olympics, to do all of these things, for them to put themselves in a position where they could jeopardize any of that by talking, it's just not super likely to me. It's more likely that they would be telling the truth than they wouldn't be.
Yeah.
And so it's like,
well, and it's also so frustrating because when you're a young athlete or if you're a young performer, like if you're in a world that is kind of adult, when you're young, you're expected to behave like an adult. You're treated like an adult. You're criticized like an adult, all of these things. But then once they come forward with these allegations, it's almost like all that integrity that they've given you and pushed upon you is kind of stripped away immediately. Like, oh no, you're just a child. Yes. You're just a woman. You don't know what you're talking about.
Oh yeah, girl.
So yeah, there's like certain instances where they're treated way above their age level, and then there's times where they're just completely disregarded for that same thing. It's just, it's so frustrating. It's like, treat them on, like, as you would on the mat, off the mat. Treat them with the same integrity.
Treat them with the same level of respect, but also with the understanding that these are children. Like, I think that that's kind of the thing. It's like, you treat them like children when it's convenient for you because you don't want to listen to them or pay attention to them, but you don't protect them like children. Like, why aren't you protecting them like they're children? Because they're teenagers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, like, it drives me insane because there was something that happened kind of like in my life, which we can talk about off mic, where there was a situation kind of like this.
Yeah.
And the inclination or the belief that like teenage girls, because they are young women.
Yeah.
They are young women. I would consider, you know, upper teens to be a young woman.
Yeah.
That because we look at them like that, that they're not also still children.
Yeah.
Like teenagers are still children. Like you are in that overlapping kind of place where you have one, you know, not yet a girl, not yet a woman.
I'm not a girl.
There it is. There it is.
Not yet a woman.
Yes, exactly. In the wise words of Britney Spears. But yeah, I mean, that's the truth. And you feel like that, right? Yeah. When you're in your teens, you feel like
that. Well, you want to be treated like an adult when you're in your teens too, because you're like, oh, like I'm not a kid anymore.
Right.
You know?
Which is why it's so important that the people in your life know that you are still a child and that you need to be protected
that
way. Well,
and what's fucked up, and like, go watch Athlete A if you feel like you can handle it, because they really go into the Carolis, which are the coaches and things like that, and the training center in Texas. Like, parents are given no communication. Like, it's super culty and crazy. So, like, parents aren't even able to, like, really know what's going on with their kids, and these parents are being lied to even when their kids were coming forward about things, to be like, oh, no, we're taking care of it, or all these different things. It's such a twisted, heartbreaking, frustrating story. But if you do want to know more about it, I highly, highly recommend watching the documentary. It's so well done. It's so good.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I'm sending strength and hugs to all of those women, because to be re-victimized over and over and over and over.
For real.
It's got to be just terrible.
I know.
Okay.
I feel for Simone Biles right now, man.
Me too. And I hope that everybody who gave her a hard time for skipping a couple of the events at the Olympics watches her testimony and feels like shit.
Those people aren't going to feel like shit. They're pieces of shit themselves.
Fair. Okay. So I want to talk about the Justice for J6 rally. Have you heard about this?
Mm-mm.
Oh, here we go. Okay. Up to 700 people are expected to attend a rally on Saturday in Washington, D.C. in support of those who rioted at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, who they are calling political prisoners.
Okay, wait. So I saw a headline today that mentioned something about the Capitol facing its biggest like threat to security since January 6th.
Yeah, yes.
Is this what that's referring to?
Yes.
Okay, I just saw the headline. All right, cool.
Yeah, so these political prisoners, in air quotes, are the more than 600 people who have been charged in the riot on January 6th. And this riot left 5 people dead and 140 police officers injured. Right. The Back the Blue Party. Let's keep that in mind. And it led to, of course, the second House impeachment of Donald Trump.
Right.
In case you needed a reminder of what happened on January 6th.
Oh, God.
So
I'd like to forget about all the Donald Trump times.
It's so infuriating to me to call these people, these terrorists, because they are domestic terrorists who attacked our nation's capital, mm-hmm. calling them political prisoners, which is the same language that we use for people like Nelson Mandela, is fucking gross.
It's very gross.
And still, some self-serving Republican politicians are reinforcing this idea that these people are political prisoners. So there's Representative Paul Gosar. He's a Republican from Arizona. Mm-hmm. He said of the nearly 200 defendants that still remain jailed, because there are people who couldn't make their bail, who are still in jail because they're insurrectionists.
Yeah.
They're actual traitors.
Yeah.
Yeah. He said of them, he said, quote, "These are political prisoners who are now being persecuted and bearing the pain of unjust suffering."
Are they?
Oh, unjust suffering.
Tell me more.
This whole thing is so like...
Oh, my God. Tell that to the 140 injured police officers and the 5 people that died.
Oh, but their fifis were hurt because Trump lost the election and they couldn't handle it.
Their fifis.
Yeah.
Their poor fifis.
They had to storm the Capitol, Madigan.
I mean, duh.
Of course.
Is there any other option?
Apparently not.
I still can't believe it ever happened. It's so infuriating.
It is. So the event is organized by Look Ahead America, which is led by a former Trump campaign staffer named Matt Brainard. And he urged participants to not wear clothes or carry signs mentioning Trump or Biden. Like anybody's going to wear something. Okay. Maybe counter-protest.
I was going to say it's probably like Biden sucks and like anti-Biden stuff.
He said, "We request that anybody attending our events not wear any clothing or have signs supportive of either President Trump or Biden. Anyone not honoring this request will be assumed to be an infiltrator, and we will take your picture, find out who you are, and make you famous." Okay.
So the same way that we got all the insurrectionists mm-hmm. into jail is yes. what you're going to do to the people that... Oh, okay, cool.
They're throwing down that reverse Uno card on us, right?
Cool.
Yeah, they're like, we're going to do the same thing. And I don't know why, other than that, I think that maybe he realizes that it was a bad look that after January 6th, you had, because everybody was like, it's Antifa, it's not Trump people, but it's like, clearly it was Trump people because all of you are wearing like Trump 2020
shirts. Yeah, and shirts, I feel like it's also a way to like weed out the people who are maybe like left-wing media that's going to be there, or I don't know, like maybe they think that if somebody is trying to go there like undercover and stealthily, that like if you're wearing a Trump shirt, we'll know that you didn't get the memo and you're not actually supposed to be here or something like that.
I just feel like it's also not very enforceable. Like, you know, really, you're gonna do all that for all these people who are showing up? Okay. And there's just no way. It's not an apolitical rally. Like, I don't understand how you're trying to frame it as though it's this apolitical thing.
The whole point of it is very political.
Yes. Yeah. You're there to defend people who were there to protest the election of a president and overturn election results. It's inherently political.
Right.
And you're doing it at our nation's capital.
Yeah. It's I guess, maybe not to draw the same, like... response, because there's no Trump. They can't say it was like a Trump rally, maybe, because they're not wearing any Trump shirts.
I guess.
Technicality.
I mean, we'll see. We'll see what happens. I actually am not too worried about. I don't think another January 6th is going to happen. I don't think they have it in them. But, you know, maybe I should knock on some wood or something.
Yeah. I also think that, I mean, hopefully everybody who is in charge of security has changed what the security looks like.
Right. You know? So the U.S. Capitol Police are erecting a temporary fence around the Capitol in anticipation of the rally. The Capitol Police Board has already issued an emergency declaration that will go into effect on the day of the demonstration, allowing the department to deputize outside law enforcement officers at the U.S. Capitol. And I know that there have been some other things that were put into place.
Yeah.
The only thing that gives me pause is that there is evidence that far-right extremist groups are going to be showing up, like the Oath Keepers, the Proud Boys, plan on attending this rally. So if anybody's going to rile anything up, it would probably be them. But I do know that security has been beefed up. So we'll see what happens. I just think this whole thing is so, stupid.
Oh, it's incredibly stupid. And I mean, it just sucks because it's like you can't stop somebody's right to protest.
Right,
and rally.
Of course. Yeah, you have a First Amendment right to be there until yeah. you start getting violent. But it's just wild to me that like they're such big crybabies. You know, they call everybody else a snowflake, but they're such big crybabies because these people who, again, are actual traitors to our nation and tried to overthrow our democracy
right.
are getting laughably short sentences.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm like, really, these political prisoners, like Shaman Guy, Q Shaman Guy, got like 5 years or
Which,
something.
Who's
like
Q Shaman Guy?
He's the guy who was in the big like
the Viking
headdress.
Helmet and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah, the Viking helmet.
Do we know, because you watched the HBO documentary, what was it called, like Into the Storm or something like that?
I started it, but it was pissing me off, so I didn't finish
oh,
it.
Oh, I watched it all, and it was really good. I wonder if any of those guys were there.
I mean, probably, yeah.
I bet they were.
I bet
Actually,
they were.
Wait, I think that they showed the insurrection at the end of the documentary. I just don't remember.
I think they did. Yeah, I think they did, because I yeah. think that there was footage from that in the trailer. So I'm pretty Frickin certain that they did.
Crazy.
I mean,
because you get to know some of those Q guys in that documentary, and it's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, do you have anything else?
I do. I would actually really love to talk about AOC's dress at the Met Gala.
Oh, okay. Let's do it. Here okay. we go, because this has been real polarizing on both sides of the aisle.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. And so I've actually had a lot of people ask me my opinion on it as well. So let's talk about it. So Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York went to the Met Gala on Monday evening dressed in a custom Brother Veli's ivory wool jacket dress. That is really hard to say.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's a lot. With the message, tax the rich, emblazoned in red across the back. The gown was made by designer Aurora James, who is a Black woman, immigrant designer, and activist. James is the founder of the environmentally conscious clothing brand Brother Veli's and is also the creator of the 15% pledge, which challenges companies to, quote, pledge 15% of their shelf price, I'm going to assume is what it says, to Black-owned businesses. So many New York elected officials were invited as, quote, guests of the museum and did not have to pay to attend the event. So
Which
that's
happens
one
every
of the
year.
Things.
That happens every year. There's right. always politicians who are invited.
Yes. And mm-hmm. they don't have to pay for their ticket or anything like that. Which
right. Which
was,
is a misconception that people have, that she paid the $30,000 ticket price or whatever it is, which
exactly,
she didn't.
Which she did not. Exactly. So that was one of the critical points here. Many on the right criticized her for going to the event in the first place, but AOC states that she believes that the Met belongs to the people. Her dress made waves on social media, with the left sharing pictures of the dress in praise and the right finding another reason to hate AOC. And then kind of as time went on, even the left started to become more critical about her choices. Donald Trump Jr. tagged her as a fraud for sending a message about taxing the rich, saying, while she's hanging out with a bunch of wealthy left-wing elites. So my initial response to this was, I see somebody who is wearing a tax the rich dress in front of a room full of, like, if not one percenters, very close to being one percenters, mm-hmm. like incredibly wealthy people. So to me, it was kind of like her shoving that in their faces a little bit with that. But I know that other people still have issues with, you know, her choosing tax the rich, as that's something that most people are on board with. So it really isn't that politically of a hot button topic.
Well, I think that there are a lot of people who are not on board with it. I think a yeah. lot of people on the right are not on board with it. I think she was in a room full of people who would say they're on board with it in theory,
yeah.
but are...
It's, but don't want to lose their money.
Absolutely true. I mean, and so I understand this. Like, the Met Gala is considered to be the most elite of elite.
It's like the Oscars of the fashion world. It's like the biggest.
But bigger. Like,
yeah.
The way that I think about it is the Met Gala is the capital at the Hunger Games. Like, that is what the Met Gala is, right?
Like, every single year when I look at it, I'm like, this is Hunger Games, because the outfits are so weird.
Right, which is beautiful. We love
oh
looking
my God,
at them.
I love them so
of
much.
Of course.
Yeah.
We love looking at these outfits. But I do understand the disconnect maybe there between, like, our socialist queen AOC being at an event that is so capitalistic and
yeah.
full of, like, so many, like, quote unquote elites. However, I think all of the people on the left who are getting super riled up, and I've seen several people who are very far left, you know, socialists who are disappointed and upset with her and posting about it. What I would say to them is, I think we have bigger fish to fry than whether or not AOC is attending this event or not. You can be critical. You can question whether or not it was a good move.
Yeah.
But to devote any energy to making posts or like talking a lot about it, I feel like is really not helpful at all. At this stage.
But I mean, this is the thing that I guess is confusing to me. And maybe this is like me being an old lady thinking about it, but it's like, if you're offered a free ticket to an event where you know you're going to be seen, at least she's making a strong political point.
Yeah.
As did a lot of other, you know, actors, athletes. Mm-hmm. I mean, Megan Rapinoe, you know, had a, what was it, In Gay We Stand or Gay
Something
United,
like something. That.
Like, there was a lot of kind of, and Peg the Patriarchy for Cara Delevingne.
That I feel like has homophobic connotations that I don't love.
Which is weird because she's gay.
Yeah, but it's, I don't know. I think it has weird vibes
it
for
does.
Me.
Oh, it totally has weird. I completely agree with you on that. But my point is there were all of these other like political statements that were made. And yes, I get the difference between a performer and a representative.
Sure.
I understand that. But I think that if you're going to go and you got a free ticket and you're like, I'm going to go to this thing because she can enjoy herself as much as she damn well pleases. Mm-hmm. She is a person. She was like, well, if I'm going to go, I'm going to make some sort of message. And while I understand people's frustration and feeling that maybe she's not doing enough to back that up, but at the same time, politicians do not have, they don't have a magic wand where they can immediately make what they want to happen happen.
Right.
So I'm glad that at least by her, I mean, that dress was everywhere. And to me, that is a huge political statement. So even if it was controversial, it's still being talked about. It's still part of the conversation.
Well, AOC is very good at that. She's very good at finding the thing that people are going to talk about, which, you know, all press is good press in a lot of ways.
Which has really put a target on her back, too.
And a target lives on AOC's back, you know, and she knew that this was going to rile up the right. She knew it.
And she don't give a fuck. That's why I love her.
I hope that it didn't, but I hope that the message resonated with the people who were there.
Me too.
Because I think that coming from my background with a lot of conservative people in my family, there are a lot of people who find it very hypocritical to have these kind of socialist beliefs or back people like Bernie Sanders and have all these socialist beliefs and then are in nearly the 1% in the amount of money that they make, like Kylie Jenner being a billionaire, you know, like those kinds of things. It can feel very hypocritical.
Well, but at the same time, it's like, yes, they're making a lot of money, but are they supposed to turn it down? You know what I mean? That's the thing is,
well,
like, you can't.
I think that you should. I don't think that anybody, there is no ethical billionaire. Even you, Rihanna.
No.
Even you, Rihanna, and you know I fucking love you. There are no ethical billionaires.
No, not at all.
And there is no reason.
But is AOC a billionaire?
AOC is not a billionaire, but I'm saying the other people in the room, because that's what's going to get people riled up.
Because
is
I
that,
think
like,
if AOC was close to being a billionaire and wore that would be fucking hypocritical.
No,
to
but
me,
I'm talking about the issue is when you attend an event like that, right?
Yes.
I think a lot of people on the right are feeling like it's not hypocritical, right? I'm just trying to get into the logic because
like she's rubbing elbows with those people.
And those people very often are going to say, "Yes, queen, tax the rich. We're with you. We're hyper progressive." And and taking themselves out of the equation, which I don't like. I really hope that Hollywood can get to a place where it recognizes that like you are part of the problem too.
Yeah.
Because there is no ethical way to do capitalism. There isn't.
You know, having worked for a celebrity in the past and hearing them talk about money, it's weird. It's very, very weird how frugal and money obsessed these people are. Like the woman that I worked for, we went trick-or-treating with, what's his name? Sean Parker, the Facebook originator guy.
I don't know.
And she was like, let's look up how much his net worth is before we go to their house. And I'm like, that's so fucking weird. Like, they just think about money in a different way. And it's more important than a lot of other things.
I don't begrudge anybody being wealthy, right? Like, it's not, no, I don't, but it's I the don't begrudge that. Obsession
with money, that's weird.
And I would hope to think that if I ever got a large sum of money, and I'm not talking about $1 billion, I'm talking about several million dollars, that I would give some of that money away, because there's just no reason for anybody to need that much money.
No.
Like, there isn't. Like, even in California, where it's like a house is going to cost you $1 to $2 million, if you have $50 million,
you don't need all 50.
All of these celebrities do, if you can afford a $30,000 ticket. And again, I don't begrudge them for that, because I'm like, yes, you're donating the money to the Met, right? Like,
yeah.
It's a complicated thing. I'm weird about it. My little socialist heart is weird about people who have like tons and tons of money, because I just...
Oh, I agree.
Our world is so fucked.
100%. I don't and that's the thing that I was trying to say, is like, I don't understand living life where money is that big of a like factor for you, or that important to you. Because to me, money is important to me because I want to be able to pay my bills.
You want to be comfortable.
And my rent. Right. And, you know, I want to be comfortable and all this kind of stuff. But the way that these wealthy people think about their money is different than the way you and I think about it.
Of course. I mean, that's the only way you become a billionaire. You become a billionaire because
you're obsessed. You're obsessed with money.
You like money more than the normal amount. Everybody likes money. Yep. Okay. Everybody likes it. Everybody needs it. But like, you like it more than you should like it. If you have more money than you can spend in three lifetimes,
exactly,
then you like it too much.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, we're at the 30-minute mark. So I really want to read this 9/11 story that was sent to us.
Yes.
So we did the first part of our 9/11 and War on Terror episode that came out last Monday. We'll be releasing part two on this coming Monday.
Yep.
So if you haven't listened to that one, I would go give it a listen.
Yeah, don't start in the middle.
Yeah, don't start at the end. You know what I mean? So
I mean, or do. Like, we won't tell you what to do.
I mean, if you really want to, if you were like, actually, I don't care about the first half, fine. Fine. But we did ask for your 9/11 stories in that episode. We were just kind of talking about if you remember where you were, what you were doing at that time. Write in and let us know. Let us know what your thoughts and feelings were.
And please still do. We got one of them. I would love so many more of them. So if you have some sort of memory from 9/11, please send it our way.
Yes, do share. Okay, so this starts off, hi fam. I was listening to the 9/11 episode and wanted to chime in. I was in sixth grade on 9/11. Me too. Hello. My school was K through 12, so they did not broadcast an announcement, so they did not upset the young kids. The high school teachers stopped teaching and put on their TVs to the news. Apparently, all the teachers were notified right away in case something else happened, but only high school teachers were allowed to put on the news.
Makes
I remember,
sense.
Yeah, totally. I remember being at lunch when my math teacher told us it happened, but not really understanding. When my mom picked me up, we talked about it, but I still didn't really understand. When we got home, I saw the replay of the second plane hitting the second tower over and over again, and it hit me how serious it was. The news was all we watched that night. The next day at school, in my study skills class, my teacher asked us what we thought. He wanted to make sure we were all okay, as he knew we watched the coverage all day the day before after
Good
we got
teacher.
Home. We had a full discussion so we could all process as a group. I really thank that teacher for that. It's crazy to think how that day changed everything. I distinctly remember a general fear of the unknown in our society, but a mentality of, quote, fear lets the terrorists win.
Yep.
Yep. In the years that followed, when Hollywood started making movies about that day, I always wanted to watch them, but I was unable to watch them all the way through at one time. I would have to stop and process and then restart the movie the next day, as it was too emotional. Looking back 20 years later, it brings up the anxieties of what I was feeling at that time. I did not watch any of the specials or documentaries commemorating the anniversary for fear of bringing up those anxieties again. And because it reminds me of the start of me being brainwashed by Fox News.
Yeah.
Thankfully, I've come a long way since then. God, my Facebook from that time was cringy. But that's a story for another time. Listening to the episode has made me want to watch a special on the 20th anniversary so I can deal with and process the emotions. Thanks for what you guys are doing. Keep up the great work.
I think that...
Jason.
Oh, I think that that's a really good point. And that's what we were discussing as well. I know for me, I wasn't expecting to have a an emotional response to watching the documentaries, but it really was something that heavily affected me. And I did have to pause and take a second and breathe. And I think especially when you're a child and there's this unknown and you're seeing the adults freak out and you don't have a sense of what's going on. You just have to trust those around you. And I think that even though we didn't go through the terrorist attacks ourselves, there's so much trauma there because of this emotional trauma, this emotional fear that we had for our safety and everything else that I think is really real. And I didn't expect that to be a thing until I started experiencing it myself, getting prepared for these episodes.
Right. Yeah. And everything else, like it wasn't just the fear for our safety. It was also everything that came afterwards. Yeah. Right. Like every time I have a conversation about 9/11 with people, it's always kind of in terms of it being this catalyst for everything after. Like everything we've experienced politically kind of started there.
Do you remember the story I told like months ago where I went to Starbucks and the girl that gave me my drinks was like, oh my God, do you remember what it was like before the world went to hell? Because I was like so old in her opinion. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yes, I do. And it's really true. I think a lot of people who are younger who have just kind of learned about this really see it in that way. And it was interesting for me to think about how politically everything was motivated differently after that event.
Yeah, absolutely. And something that they said that really resonated with me, and I wrote them back and kind of said this as well, because I hadn't ever thought about it in those terms, but 9/11 really was the beginning of the end in terms of radicalization for a lot of people on the right, my family and myself included at that time, where it became a thing. It was really the start of having the news on all the time, and what news you decided to engage in really shaped your worldview. And for us, it was Fox News, and it was on all the time. And it was always like these opinions about 9/11 and about Muslim people and about, and it really did start radicalizing a lot of people to get us to where we are right now, you know, like, and I didn't even think about that, that there is trauma involved with that part of it too. Yeah. So thank you so much for submitting your story.
Yes.
We really appreciate it. I saw so many parallels to my own story.
You know? Well, and that's the thing is like, we can always tell our experiences, but there are things that we're going to be missing out on. So the fact that we had a listener reach out and say something that you maybe haven't thought of, but really resonated with you, like that's why we really, really love to hear from all of you. We do learn so much. So if you have any thoughts, please reach out to us, whether it's big or small. You know, if you have your 9/11 stories or if there's anything that you want to share from any of the episodes that we've covered, we really, really do want to hear from you and learn so much from you all. So if you have a 9/11 story or a news topic or anything that you would like for us to discuss, please email us at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com or direct message us and follow us on Instagram at Angry Neighborhood Feminist. We have a Facebook business and group page. You can go on the business page and rate and review us and go on the group page and chat with your fellow listeners. And I'm still checking those reviews all the time. I know how many of you are listening. So if you have not left us a review, it would really mean so very much to us for you to leave a 5-star review with a quick sentence about why you love us so much. It'll help us out so much. And it also really makes our day. So if you haven't done it, please go ahead and do so. All right, that's all we have for you today. With all that being said, we encourage you to rage on. Bye.